Kia ora koutou. Welcome to tonight's Acute Red Eye Ophthalmology webinar with Scott Davidson. Scott is a GP Rural Hospital Medicine doctor based in Dargaville with a long-standing interest in ophthalmology and frequently teaches students and participants at the University of Otago's Rural Surgical Specialties paper. Tonight's session is supported by the Section of Rural Health in the General Practice Department at the University of Otago. It is endorsed for 1 hour of CME. Thank you, Scott, for giving up your time this evening, especially as we know at the moment how precious our time is in the current primary care environment. And I look forward to a very engaging session. Okay, Scott, I will hand over to you. And again, just thank you very much for coming this evening.
Thank you very much for the invite, Lucinda. It's a pleasure to be here and happy to take any questions at any time. I'm not sure whether we'll get through all the cases, but I did think I would just start with a little review of the important things. So here we go, we'll make a start. Of course, the most important thing with any patient is the history. And that's going to suggest the cause, the disease, direct the examination, place the problem in the context of the patient. So you do need to go through the past ophthalmic history, surgical medical history, allergies, medicines, social history, smoking, alcohol, occupation is often very important, family ocular history, and review of symptoms. Hopefully, if you do that, you've got a good idea from the start what this might be. And then the examination, obviously it's important to make sure that the patient has got an airway, breathing and circulation, and has walked into your office, hopefully just with a red eye, not something worse. But you should always check the visual acuity. And then there are some other examinations you might like to think of doing, checking the visual field, ocular movements, the pupil. This fellow here really has got one pupil there, one pupil there. Unfortunately, he had something whack into his eye. But it's always good to check the red reflex. I think it's an underutilized sign. Have a look at the anterior chamber with a bright light. Hopefully, you can manage fundoscopy. Check under the lid, especially if there's foreign body sensation, and use some fluorescein. Check the pressure and examine the face for sensation, movement, and corneal sensation. So just to quickly review the anatomy of the eye, of course, you've got the two lenses at the front, the cornea and the lens, and then you've got the photographic membrane at the back of your eye, the retina. And it's made up of a hard outer layer, the sclera, which joins to the cornea. The cornea has got an epithelium, a stroma, and a one-layer endothelium. And we'll move on to case one. So I've got a little stem, and then I've got a photo, and we can talk about them as we go. So a 76-year-old lady presents. Her friend told her that she had a red eye and she should go and see the doctor. She didn't realize it until then. There was no pain, no photophobia, no watering, just a mild swollen feeling perhaps in her eye. Her vision was normal. What are the things that you might think to check with this lady? Here's her photo. I'm sure everyone's seen this case. And there are a few questions and things that I check with this patient. What do you think this is?
Some subconjunctival hemorrhage.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I know you asked me yesterday what else to check, but I actually must admit that I've forgotten what you said that I was supposed to check in this lady, apart from maybe anticoagulant and blood thinners and things.
Yeah, I don't usually check much, but I do just check the blood pressure and look at their medications, see what they're on. And typically just offer them some lubricants if they feel they need anything to settle things down. That's our very first pretty easy acute red eye.
In terms of the lubricants you tend to use, Scott, what would you recommend?
I just use polytears. They're on the Pharmac list, and people can just buy over-the-counter artificial tears, and there's lots of them available. Our second case is a 41-year-old tourist presenting to your rural hospital with a swollen, painful right eye for 2 days. The left now has become swollen as well, and two of her family members have also developed red eyes. On examination, her eyes swollen shut, making it impossible to examine with a slit lamp. And she says the visual acuity seems to be, she says her vision's okay. There's a seroprevalent discharge and there's some chemosis of her conjunctiva and injection. How would you assess this lady's eye and what are your concerns about the possible cause and what treatment might you consider? So here she is.
Now we're very, and we're very happy for people to put stuff in the chat. This isn't the test Lucinda day.
Everybody. Good. Good. Okay.
So Scott would like it to be, I think.
Yeah, yeah, should be. Yes, yeah, no, I note the lack of PPE there. Probably not the best way of doing it, but I did wash my hands afterwards. It looks a bit nasty, but often people seem to have difficulty recording a visual acuity, but if they simply pull the eyelids apart, then there's a better chance of being able to do that. Of course, with this lady's family also getting red eyes, then you probably have got a good idea of what this is or might be.
So a couple of people once put it in about being contagious and I said yes. And then we've got a couple with conjunctivitis. One has put acute and one has put bacterial. So we discussed that point last night. Do you want to elaborate on that, Scott?
Usually bacterial conjunctivitis gives you a very pussy eye that sticks your eyelashes together. And really this is more of a seroprevalent discharge. And usually bacterial conjunctivitis is not quite as infectious as viral. And given that two of her family members have also got it, and it's a watery looking discharge, and both eyes are affected, this is adenovirus, most likely adenovirus conjunctivitis. And it's a particularly nasty conjunctivitis, really. It can last for 3-4 weeks. And it can make your eye very uncomfortable and cause you to wake at night. And sometimes it can cause a keratoconjunctivitis where the cornea is also affected. And sometimes ophthalmologists do give people steroid drops to try to settle the discomfort down. I wouldn't recommend doing that unless you got advice from an ophthalmologist. Occasionally, you can get inflammation of the tarsal conjunctiva with a pseudomembrane, and occasionally also ophthalmologists use bandage contact lens to place on the cornea to try to stop the irritation and rubbing from that. There are some papers published that say iodine can be helpful at reducing the viral load, ophthalmic iodine, which is 5% povidone iodine. But you have to make it up yourself, and it's often put with dexamethasone and lignocaine. And so it's got to be pretty bad to go to that extent. Most viral conjunctivitis is just simply some advice for lid hygiene, washing hands well, and trying not to give it to other people and waiting for it to resolve by itself. So fortunately, really, actually, most of the majority of red eyes that turn up in primary care or perhaps to rural hospital medicine are going to be fairly benign, self-limiting things that get better. But they're not all that. So here's another one. A 55-year-old lady presents with a mildly irritated red right eye. Her pupils are normal and she has normal visual acuity. Or is it her left eye? I can't remember. We'll have a look in the photo. There's no past history of trauma or foreign body, and she has no uptake of fluorescein. What are some tests that you could do to help you with the diagnosis? And are there associations of other medical conditions that you should be concerned about? It was her left eye, not her right eye. And it came on quite quickly, and it was a bit prickly. And What do you think about the distribution of those blood vessels? I think they do look slightly radial and linear, but her vision's normal. It's a mild discomfort. It's a bit red. There's no pus. There's no foreign body. There's no staining of the cornea. What do you think it could be?
I'm going to agree with Roma, who said episcleritis.
Correct. Well done, Roma. How are you going to treat this lady, Roma?
She said NSAID drops.
Yep, that would be okay. Or you could just use some lubricants. Generally, you don't use steroids. This is the first time it's happened for her. Are you worried about any possible associated medical conditions?
Just while we wait for that, Scott, on the last case, and I think specifically around the conjunctivitis, so we've been asked if and when someone would start steroids and if there was any role for NSAID drops in that scenario.
Yeah, if it was particularly symptomatic and troublesome for the patient, and you might like to ring up the ophthalmologist and see what they suggest, I don't think I'd go giving steroids off your own bat. NSNADs, yes, you could try them, but actually they can just by themselves cause a bit of stinging in the eye. And another thing, I guess you could try just oral non-steroidal anti-inflammatories to see if that alleviated any discomfort. It's not usually that bad, the discomfort. Paracetamol probably would be fine. But I don't think you'd do too much I don't think you'd do too much harm. Maybe if you got a little bit of stinging with putting the drops in, then the person might just stop anyway. But you wouldn't do too badly if you prescribed non-steroidals. Whereas if you prescribe steroids and you've got the diagnosis wrong, then potentially that might be drastically harmful.
Yes, and we'll come back to that point.
We'll think about that later, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so coming up in terms of potential connected conditions with the episcleritis, autoimmune, sarcoid, IBD, RA.
You could ask the patient whether they had a past history of those things. For a first episode of episcleritis, usually we wouldn't investigate it if there was nothing in the history that was suggestive of an autoimmune illness. But however, if it's a recurrent episcleritis, then you would start thinking a little bit about those things.
Right. Thank you.
So we'll move on. 43-year-old man, 2-week history, increasingly painful red left eye, throbbing, watering, and waking at night with discomfort. His vision's okay in both eyes, 6'6". He's got diffusely red left eye with a violaceous hue in the sunlight. His cornea is clear, his pupils are circular and reactive. What do you think the diagnosis might be? Would you investigate him? What are some causes, and what would your management, or what would you do with this patient? Here he is here. His GP had given him a course of chloramphenicol, which didn't work. So don't say, I'll give him chloramphenicol. What would you do, Lucinda? Would you be worried about this guy, this eye?
Eyes aren't generally an area of my comfort zone. So I do tend to, anything that looks red and sore and has been waking him at night would make me concerned. And obviously we've tried the basics and we haven't won. So obviously this is a lot more red and extending more along than the episcleritis. So considering something like scleritis. And interestingly, your point about the violaceous hue, do you actually commonly see that scleritis in the sunlight? I don't know which doctor's room you work in, but...
Yeah, I do have some sunlight pouring in my window. It's good, actually. It's like a hothouse, actually. I should put tomatoes on my window.
Good for mental health.
Yeah. Yeah, scleritis is not that common, so you don't see too many cases. But this particular guy did have a sort of slightly purpley violaceous hue in the sunlight with his eye. So I think that textbook description is at least true in one case. you got the diagnosis right. How about what are you going to do with this guy? Are you worried or not?
I would refer him. I would discuss him.
Good.
Generally, I would just refer him to ED. And then in my area where I work, because I work in primary care, and I would refer him to ED, and then ED would see them manage and investigate further.
Yeah.
And then one of the problems in primary care is doing a full eye exam in 15 minutes is very tough work. So if I had concerning features or I was worried, I would refer him into ED where they've got a lot more time, because I don't think I'm going to comfortably be able to sort that out in 15 minutes.
Yeah, good. All right. Yes, scleritis is a nasty condition, and half of the time it is associated with systemic disease.
Mm.
And I don't know whether there's been any comments on the chat about the possible causes or not.
No.
But they are those things that people did mention with the episcleritis, but more so rheumatoid arthritis, vasculitides, Wegener's, IBD. Yeah, there are some reasonably nasty conditions that sometimes can also give you kidney failure and destroy your lungs and sinuses. And so, yes, you should definitely refer this guy. About 10% of scleritis is infective. So viruses, TB, syphilis, those sort of things do also cause it. So, yeah, you want to refer this guy to an ophthalmologist to be investigated. And then they often need immunosuppression and steroids and fairly heavy-duty medication.
And in terms of the urgency around the referral, Scott?
Yes, scleritis, those particularly bad things like Wegener's, sometimes they're formalint, and sometimes someone might go into kidney failure by tomorrow. Yeah, you want to refer this person today. I would ring up the ophthalmology service registrar or send them into ED as you do.
And would we do anything prior to referring them in?
No.
Or if you're just refer
them in. Yeah. All right, we'll move on to an 80-year-old man referred to you by his optometrist with a gritty red left eye for 2 weeks. The optometrist noted a foreign body on the cornea. And you've asked his past history and found out that he had some radiotherapy and surgery to a left parotid tumor. His vision 6/12. Here he is here, and with his red left eye, and you can see by his left ear he's got a bit of a dint where he's had his parotid removed. And there is the foreign body on his eye, just at about 8 o'clock. Next to the pupil. And if you put a bit of fluorescein in the eye, it looks like this. And this is not all that common either, but this is filamentary keratitis, because it has these little filaments that stick onto the cornea and then have this little tail. So this is filamentary keratitis, and it can be caused from radiation, but it also can be caused by other causes of dry eye. Sometimes patients on a lot of eye drops that have got benzalkonium chloride in it that irritate the eye will also develop this sort of keratitis. And it's generally treated with lubrication and occasionally mild steroids. If you saw this guy, you would probably be referring him on. It's not an emergency. You don't have to refer him today, but you probably look and wonder what it is and maybe ring up and say, I've got this guy and there's this fluorescein staining and there's strands on his eye.
Looks like a comet.
It looks like a comet, yeah. Maybe it should be comet keratitis.
I could rename it.
You could. Okay, here we go. Here's another guy. He's a 27-year-old surfer. He's had an increasingly red, sore left eye. He says that he's had a lesion on his eye for some time, really, before, but it's never been this red. And he did go surfing every day for the last 2 weeks. What is the lesion and how would you treat it? Have you seen any of these, Lucinda?
I have, but I like how this person, Roz, who didn't hadn't even seen the picture but knew instantly that what the answer was.
Oh, yeah, good.
Are you a surfer, Roz? I'm intrigued.
Must be.
I have.
Yes. If you're in Gisborne, there must be a lot of surfing there. Surely everyone has to be, surely.
Roz lives in Gisborne.
So okay.
It must be a hazard of. I have seen a few, but actually I've seen them all from the Pacific. I had one, so maybe she just swam a lot. So yeah. Maybe it's just the exposure to the sea and the salt water.
The pterygium itself is from radiation, from the sun, and they're more common at the equator. And particularly in New Zealand with our hole in the ozone, although it's meant to have closed up, but beta radiation from the sun causes pterygia. But his is particularly inflamed and red and swollen, probably from getting salt water in his eye, as you say. What would you do to treat him?
Well, I go with orals with everything, but because of the security, to the proximity and the potential of it encroaching on his visual acuity, I would refer that.
Good.
But the likelihood of opthal, because the one I have referred in still hasn't been seen, so I suspect it's not a high priority for ophthalmology.
Yeah, he's going to wait on a waiting list for a while. Mm. Does anyone in the audience have any particular drops or things they use to treat this problem?
I'm imagining you could use your anti-inflammatory drops.
You could do, yep. You can just use lubrication, but some decongestants like nephazoline, Albolon A drops are quite good for reducing the swelling and getting some of that swelling and redness down. So, yeah, that's good. All right, we'll move on to this 50-year-old man, and he had a poor vision in his left eye for a week. He'd been drinking at a party, he was drunk, and woke up with his thumb in his left eye, but he wasn't really sure what happened. Anyway, his vision was count fingers in his left eye, and he got to the end of the week and thought he'd better do something about it. And when you looked at his eye, he had a little dark spot next to the limbus at 7 o'clock and an ovoid-looking pupil. And I was just wondering what you thought the dark spot was, the diagnosis was, and the management. So you can see he's got an oval-looking pupil there. And there's a little bit of a dark spot there. You can see it a little better. And I wondered if anyone in the audience had any ideas on what that might be.
So can you see that from Tony, prolapsed iris? And Roma said uveitis, glaucoma, traumatic mydriasis.
Tony is right. The reason why the pupil is ovoid is that the iris has been sucked out the hole in his sclera that somehow he got, maybe from his thumb poking his eye, or maybe something else happened at the party, but yep, that's a hole, and that's the iris plugging it, and that's made the pupil ovoid. And yes, there probably is a traumatic iritis there along with it. And yeah, you better refer this guy to ophthalmology to try to fix this problem.
What always amazes me is how someone will wait a week for that.
That's right. Yeah, that amazed me too. And he didn't really have much in the way of suggestion of infection. But when you've got a hole in your eye, it would be easy to get infection inside the eye, which would be a bit of a concern. Yeah, all right, that's that guy. Don't drink at parties to that extent anyway. Here we go, we'll move on. 78-year-old man, 2-week history of a left forehead rash, shooting pains, mild photophobia and blurred vision. So this has been going on for 2 weeks. His vision 6/12 in the left eye. The rash involves the tip of his nose. What sign is this and its significance?
Okay, we're going to wait for this one, team, because I'm sure someone will get the name.
That's fine. You put some fluorescein in his eye and there's some staining superiorly. Does this have any implications for treatment? Here he is. So he's got this rash over his forehead, this red eye, and the rash involves the tip of his nose. What's the name of the sign for the involvement of the tip of the nose and its significance?
I'll give you a clue. It's not Robertson, because that was the one I went for. But it is someone's son. No. Oh, yes, Aaron. Nice. Hutchinson's.
Yes, Hutchinson's sign. Yep. The significance.
Run through all of that. I think that's useful. Run through your anatomy lesson.
Oh, yeah. The significance is the nasociliary nerve, which is a branch of the ophthalmic nerve, which is a branch of the trigeminal. It supplies the naso, the nose, and the ciliary body and cornea. So if you've got virus that's reached your tip of your nose, it's probably also reached your cornea along that nerve. And if you've got eye involvement with herpes zoster ophthalmicus with shingles, then you want to refer that person to ophthalmology. But however, if you don't have that sign, you still have a one-third chance of having eye involvement. So you still need to look closely at the eye and decide whether the shingles is affecting the eye or not, even if you don't have Hutchinson's sign. So here we go. Here's the fluorescein stain. And there's a mucus plaque that stains with fluorescein superiorly on his eye. So he does have a keratitis as well. And how would you treat this, Lucinda?
I've got two questions for one, at least, question first.
Yeah.
The risk of going blind or impacting on your vision, and how quickly does that develop?
Yes, it can be very nasty, obviously, shingles. I'm sure we have all seen very nasty cases of shingles. And it primarily causes iritis or anterior uveitis, but it also can cause keratitis, and it can cause retinitis, and it can cause encephalitis, varicella zoster. So it can be a nasty condition. It can cause a nerve palsy, so you probably should check eye movements as well. Can cause peripheral outer retinal necrosis of your retina. So those complications are not common. Most commonly, it's going to be causing iritis or anterior uveitis with inflammation in the front of the eye. And the patient's going to have pain and photophobia, and it's going to go on. And it needs to be treated to suppress that with steroids. But if you had a keratitis as well, then of course you are going to, even if you don't, you're going to put this patient on valacyclovir or acyclovir, and probably you would want to put some acyclovir ointment in the eye as well for this guy with his keratitis. Often these people do actually need significant pain relief for their post-herpetic neuralgia with nortriptyline or gabapentin or even morphine. And sometimes they have a terrible itch, and it's very difficult to treat that. It doesn't seem to respond to those medications particularly well.
As in, the itch doesn't respond to the treatment for the post-herpetic neuralgia?
No. Well, not in my experience, but...
And Scott, so we mentioned the treatment in terms of the oral, potentially topical antivirals, valacyclovir or acyclovir. In terms of referring to ophthalmology, would you refer everyone with facial herpes or varicella? And how quickly would you refer them?
If they had normal vision, they didn't have photophobia, they didn't have a red eye, the pupil was quite fastly reactive, circular, and I put some fluorescein in, there was no staining, and I was pretty confident that it didn't involve the eye, it was just the forehead skin, Then I would just follow them up myself. But the keratitis can show up. This guy's turned up 2 weeks later, so initially you might only have the virus having got to the forehead, But then over time, it keeps on propagating down the nerve and eventually gets the eye 2 weeks later. So you'd still, if you're not going to refer them, and probably ophthalmology probably doesn't want to see them unless the eye has been involved. So if you're fairly confident the eye's not involved, you should follow them up in 2 weeks' time or a week's time just to make sure that it's improving and the eye's not becoming involved.
And in terms of ensuring the eye's not involved, can you basically do that on history and symptoms, or would you always look with, say, look for fluorescein uptake? Would you do a slit lamp exam?
I always do a slit lamp exam because I have a slit lamp. But if you don't have a slit lamp, then you're in a more difficult situation. And then I don't think you shouldn't be growled at if you refer someone with bad V1 shingles affecting their forehead and you're unsure on whether it's affecting their eye or not. But if they've got no photophobia and their vision's normal and the pupil's reactive and their eye's white, then that's probably good enough as long as you follow them up. But if you want to refer that patient, then you might find it a little bit difficult to get someone to accept it on the end of the phone. Not sure what people's experience might be out there.
But if you are confident that it's involved or concerned that it is involving the eye, that would be a same-day referral.
Maybe they don't have to see the person on the same day, but if you rang, they might say, we'll see them tomorrow. And they might say, you need to prescribe the antivirals, and you can prescribe them some steroid eye drops, given that the cornea looks okay with no fluorescein staining, and we will see them tomorrow or the next day or midweek.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Okay, a 49-year-old man, 3 days of a sore red right eye with watering, mild photophobia, has been rubbing it. No similar history in the past. Previously, he's had severe atopic eczema on mycophenolate and past right cataract surgery. His vision is count fingers in the right eye. And on fluorescein staining, you can see an ulcer. Anything else you can see? What do you think the diagnosis is and the treatment? So that's a photo. Actually, I should have taken this photo before I put the fluorescein stain in. But that's the fluorescein. You can see the ulcer is staining. And what else can you see about that fluorescein?
So obviously, about in the middle of the picture, there is a blue area, which you gave it a name, like a defect, where the fluorescein isn't being uptaked.
Yeah, this is a negative stain.
Negative
stain pattern. And you get this negative stain pattern when there's some swelling and the fluorescein's falling off. The tear film's not getting onto this mountain because it's swollen the cornea and poking through the sea of fluorescein. So this guy's got a swollen cornea. He's got this funny-looking serpentine ulcer here. What do you think this ulcer, do you think it's a dendritic ulcer?
It looks a little bit like that, but it's not 100%. I think his history of the contact lenses is relevant. And he's been rubbing his eye, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has been rubbing his eye.
Is he rubbing his eye because it's irritated, or has the rubbing his eye led to the issue with his eye?
The doctor who saw him and asked me to have a look thought it might be the rubbing. But when I saw this, I thought it might be the herpes simplex virus, actually. And I did do a swab, and it did come back positive on PCR for herpes simplex virus. So I think it is a dendritic ulcer. And so I did start him on some valacyclovir, and I judiciously gave him a little bit of steroid ointment. But I wouldn't recommend people give steroid ointment at all for dendritic ulcers. And I wonder if anyone might know why.
It leads to catastrophe.
Yes, it leads to catastrophe, yeah. So this is the normal, typical dendritic ulcer. that's branching and stains of fluorescein. And if you put Pred Forte steroid in this eye, then it goes from this to this because the virus takes off and it can cause necrosis in your cornea and eat through it and a lot of scarring. And so never make the mistake of mixing up herpes simplex from shingles, varicella zoster, because varicella zoster sometimes will cause a microdendrite, a very small, slightly dendritic looking keratitis. And if you don't see these things often, you might get a bit confused because herpes ophthalmicus is often treated with steroids, but you definitely don't treat HSC keratitis with steroids because of this. But actually with the fellow that I saw, this past case, this is actually a recurrence and he's got a condition that's called discoform keratitis, and it's a late complication of having had a dendritic ulcer where you get an autoimmune reaction that inflames the cornea and causes swelling of the cornea and microcystic edema, all these little cysts of swelling that you might see on slit lamp examination. And you can appreciate on slit lamp that this is all a bit swollen and it's the shape of a disc. So it's called discoform keratitis. And this is treated with steroids to get the swelling down. But if it looks like there's a recurrence of a dendritic ulcer with it, you need to put them on antivirals. And in fact, it's probably a good idea to put this on person, even if they didn't have a recurrence of the dendritic ulcer, it might be worthwhile putting them on antivirals anyway. But sometimes it can be a bit difficult actually to make the diagnosis of HSV keratitis. This is HSV keratitis with an amoeboid ulcer rather than a dendritic ulcer. And it also causes a bit of a conjunctivitis, and sometimes you'll just have the conjunctivitis. Sometimes it will just give you a lesion on the eyelid, like you get on your lip with HSV. Mm-hmm. So it is something to keep in the back of your mind, even if there isn't a dendritic ulcer there. Could this be HSV, an atypical presentation of HSV keratitis? And really, because of that, you should be very reluctant to put steroids in any red eye that you aren't absolutely certain of the diagnosis, or else one day you're going to destroy someone's cornea. Okay, we shall move on. 49-year-old lady who suffers from blepharitis and crusty eyes presents with a gritty, mildly photophobic red left eye. Her vision is 67.5. On slit lamp exam, there is a circumferential white area at 6 o'clock adjacent to the limbus. What is this, or what is the diagnosis? Any tests you would do and treatment? And so here it is. Here's your eye. It's been a bit gritty and sore. And you can see there's a white area at 6 o'clock. I wonder if
anyone knows what this is called. Chat. This is one of the cases that I learned and learned something about. So if anyone gets this, otherwise I'll go.
So she's got slightly crusty eyelashes, slightly red eyelid margin. She has blepharitis. She has a bit of gooey stuff in her eyelashes. And what is this, Lucinda? Can you remember from Monday?
Yes, marginal keratitis.
Yes, it's marginal keratitis. And marginal keratitis is caused by toxins irritating the corneal epithelium and causing immune complexes to deposit and break down the epithelium of the cornea. And it's caused by staph toxin, and it's caused by a chemical toxin from Meibom getting a bit blocked in the meibomian glands, causing blepharitis. And the test you could do, you could put some fluorescein stain in, and you can see that there is a defect in the epithelium. So really, I think if you've got someone who has a defect in the epithelium with staining of a fluorescein, and if you weren't certain that it was definitely like an abrasion, you thought it was something else, then really that person warrants to be referred, and you should ring up the ophthalmology service and say, I've got this patient, this is the history, this is the visual acuity, and they've got this fluorescein staining on their cornea, because this particular condition is treated again with steroids. But if you're going to put steroids in the eye, really it should be an ophthalmologist who's taking responsibility for that. So I think anyone who's got a defect in the epithelium that you're concerned about, you should feel very happy to ring up and get help. And then here's another patient, a different patient, same problem. The meibomian gland here is all blocked and there's a lot of meibum stuck in here, and that's driving this inflammation. And to fix this, I had to give this a good squeeze and get all that out, and that little lump went down, and there's a whole lot of gooey looking meibum stuck in there. And then after that, after I got rid of that, actually the eye settled down a lot quicker. All right. 58-year-old lady who was a contact lens wearer, saw her GP 2 days ago with a sore right eye and a white spot. Her GP prescribed to her 4 times a day chlorampheniol. She presented to you the next day with worse vision, hand movements, and bad pain and photophobia. What is the diagnosis and what did her GP do wrong? She's a contact lens wearer. She had a white spot. Now her eye looks like this. What do you think it is? Anyone know out there what this white stuff is here?
Alan does. Pseudomonas.
What? Yes, Pseudomonas. Alan is absolutely right. Pseudomonas. Pseudomonas is associated with contact lens bacterial keratitis. And Pseudomonas is resistant to chlorampheniol. And really, the patient should have been referred the first time round, and they should have had a scraping and been put on intensive antibiotic eye drops, and then they wouldn't have had so much scarring in their cornea after their bacterial keratitis. Well done.
Sorry, Scott, what are the key, because obviously we're both GP, so just to reassure everyone, we're not into GP bashing, but
no,
just in terms of the key points in that history that would prompt you to refer versus giving chlorampheniol drops, so we can learn from everyone else's mistakes.
Yep. Photophobia, pain, and decreased vision, all red flags for a red eye. And if you see a white dot in the cornea, the white stuff is past white blood cells. Yeah, this is one of my colleagues some maybe 15 plus years ago, maybe longer. I don't know how they managed to get this wrong, but they did. Anyhow.
But for the grace of God.
So true. So true.
And just quickly in here, there are a couple of questions. Going back to the marginal keratitis, Brendan has just mentioned that sometimes utilize, and I think this is a very good point because I do similar, utilizing a second opinion from local optometry to save a patient traveling to firm up the diagnosis for clinical scenarios like marginal keratitis where steroids are indicated. Can we just comment on utilizing other people, expertise within our community?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. If you've got an optometrist who's got a slit lamp, who's closer than sending a patient out to an ophthalmologist, and they're happy to take a phone call and see the patient on the same day or the next day, then yeah, if you've got a relationship with an optometrist, a lot of optometrists now have got therapeutic rights they can prescribe. Yeah. Definitely, if you know your local optometrist and they're happy to take a patient, then that can sometimes be a lot quicker to get an answer. And they see patients every day. They use a slit lamp and are very adept at it.
Absolutely. And I've certainly seen people in ED where we don't have local ophthalmology cover a lot of the time now, sadly. And the plan has been, after I've consulted over the phone, to see optometry the next day for follow-up. to have a more in-depth exam by someone who does it a lot more than I do. So, yeah, I think utilising them is great. Good point. Thank you, Brendan. Is there any other points you want to make about that? So I just wondered in terms of when is chlorambucil useful? Because it does seem to get prescribed a lot, I think, considering antimicrobial stewardship.
Yeah.
And I do know of some people who use it, say, in viral, I think, actually. We're pretty confident it's not a purulent conjunctivitis. They use it as a soothing agent, which...
Well, you could just use some polytears as a soothing agent. Mm. Yeah, I'm sure it's not... I'm sure I prescribe it way too much, too. I think we're all particularly bad with prescribing antibiotics, aren't we? Really, in some ways, even bacterial conjunctivitis, 95, 96% of it's going to get it better by itself just with cleaning the eye each day. And chlorambucil eye drops or fusithalmic probably only reduce the duration of a sticky, gooey eye by a day or two in the duration of illness. So, yes, we probably do prescribe too much of it. When should you prescribe it? I definitely do for bacterial conjunctivitis anyway, but is it really needed? Probably not all the time.
No.
Definitely not for viral conjunctivitis.
No, yes. A lot more.
Or allergic. Use antihistamines for allergic conjunctivitis. 22-year-old man, sore left eye, 3 days, blurred vision. He had a couple of blood noses that day, no trauma. He didn't wear contact lenses. He was a dairy farmer. His obs were okay. His vision was 6/18 in the left eye. And the GP who saw him thought he might have conjunctivitis, so did prescribe him some chlorambucil ointment this time, not drops, and gave him some return advice. But anyway, he did come back because his red eye didn't get any better. And this was his red eye. And this is a reasonably common sort of mistake for prescribing chlorambucil. But he did say that he had quite a sore back for some number of years. And I don't know whether people can see this, but there's some white stuff on the lens. And I put some dilating drops in his eyes, phenylnephrine and tropicamide. And some of this pigment here stayed on the lens of the eye. So does anyone have an idea of what has caused this man's red sore eye that hasn't got better with chlorambucil and has this fibriny stuff on the lens and some sticking of his iris to the lens?
Anterior uveitis is a diagnosis that Roman
was given. Yes, yeah, that's right. Yep. Yep. And I did his HLA-B27, it was positive. His QuantiFERON gold was negative, so it wasn't TB and it wasn't syphilis because his RPR was negative. And it wasn't sarcoidosis because his serum ACE was negative, and it wasn't Wegener's granulomatosis because his ANCA was negative. So I thought probably he had ankylosing spondylitis with his long history of back pain, B27 positive, and his left anterior uveitis. But yeah, I think he did have a bit of photophobia, and his vision was 6/18. So normally you're not going to get that sort of drop. And although the doctor did say that they thought his pupil was circular and reactive, I had my doubts. I'm not sure that he did that test quite properly enough. The pupil
was
stuck down with posterior synechiae. So the iris was stuck down on the lens. And when I saw him, it didn't move, but maybe I'm being too hard on my colleague. But you do have to look closely with a really bright light. And it often is difficult to see pupils in people with brown irises. So you've got to have a bright light and some backlit light in the room and someone to lift their eyelids up so that you can see clearly their pupils and their pupil reaction. So that's my tip there for pupils.
Thank you.
Okay, here's one that I got wrong. It's not only my colleagues, but sometimes I get these things wrong too. 23-year-old Tongan man. Actually, English was his second language, and he nodded a lot when I was talking to him. And I wasn't sure whether that meant yes or no. But he had a mildly sore photophobic red left eye, and his OBS were normal, and his vision was normal. But he had a white, flat little area at the bottom of his eye, and I thought he had iritis. I was sort of right, but anyway, here it is here. What is this called? This little white thing. So I want someone on the chat to tell me what this is here. Right, you got Tony. This right, Lucinda.
There is obviously some eye gurus in here.
Hypopian. And is there anyone out there who's going to tell me what the diagnosis is? Okay, anyway, I did refer this guy as a, not by phone, but as an urgent outpatient letter, e-referral letter. But anyway, he got worse. I prescribed him some steroid eye drops. He got worse, and he went down to Auckland to see his Tongan GP in Auckland, who could speak Tongan. And his Tongan GP thought he had keratitis and referred him into the hospital. And the hospital admitted him. And by this time, his vision was quite a bit worse. And they noticed that he had raised liver function tests. And they thought maybe he had a liver abscess and that he had an infection in his eye from the liver abscess. So they referred him to the medics. The medics did an ultrasound of his liver, and that was fine. So they started to hunt where else might this be. And actually, it turned out that he had subacute bacterial endocarditis and a vegetation on one of his valves. So this was a hematogenous case of infective endophthalmitis, which does give you a form of iritis. It just happens to be an infective one. And it usually affects the whole of the eye, not just the front of the eye. So I think I just saw him a bit early in the piece while his vision was good. But yeah, sometimes these things are pretty rare. Normally endophthalmitis is from surgery. Patients who've either had intravitreal injections or have had cataract surgery. But a small number of them, maybe 10%, have endogenous endophthalmitis. So if you see someone with a hypopian, definitely refer them and ring up. I should have. But he got there and he did well and he got a vitrectomy and he's still my patient. And actually his vision's pretty good now. But managing his warfarin with his metallic valve is not. And trying to get him to understand when English is a second language is a real challenge. Anyway. Try to encourage him not to drink Carver and make his eye go up and down. So there we go. I think we must be into the home straight. I'm not sure. This might be the last one. 50-year-old woman presents to a rural hospital complaining of blurry vision and aching pain in the left eye. She can barely see the Snellen chart. While you are there, she vomits. Her vision is hand movements. Her eye is red with a mid-fixed dilated pupil and a hazy cornea. What additional information would you like to seek from this patient? Or what should you do? Here she is. Anyone know what her problem is? And what are you going to do to help her?
That is right. It is glaucoma, acute glaucoma.
Yes, correct. Acute angle closure glaucoma.
And anyone got any suggestions on the acute management? Obviously, might depend on where you work. I would imagine some of us don't have this in our clinic.
Yeah, you, of course, this is an emergency.
Essence of time, you tell it. Go for it, Scott.
Yeah, this is an emergency, and you've got to get this patient to care, or else she'll lose her vision. You're going to be ringing the ophthalmologist, and they're going to be probably saying, you need to get here quickly, but do you have some Diamox? Can you give her some oral Diamox or some IV Diamox? Do you have some Tamoxifen eye drops or some Brimonidine eye drops or some any drop that might lower the pressure? And you might like to give her some anti-nausea medication and some pain relief and maybe try to stick her at 45 degrees lying down to reduce drainage of blood from her eye. But yeah, this lady needs to get to an ophthalmologist and needs that pressure lowered. And they might give her, if that's not working, they might give her some IV Diamox Plus, they might give her some IV mannitol. And they, if they can manage to get the cornea clear and put a laser peripheral iridotomy through the iris to let some aqueous through into the anterior chamber and hopefully open up her angle and get the aqueous flowing out through the trabecular meshwork and to reverse her pupil block, she'll be much happier. Sometimes this might be precipitated by medication, antihistamines, anticholinergics, things that cause pupil dilation. So you might like to ask a history, but you want to sort the problem out first and quickly.
Erin has talked about or is describing here a procedure called corneal indentation. Can you see that in the chat?
Yes. No, I can't see it in the chat, but you can use corneal indentation, and sometimes ophthalmologists will try this first, where you put a gonioscopy lens on the eye and you press it. And in fact, some people get subacute angle closure where they get this pain in their eye, but they find if they rub their eye or push on their eye, it goes away. And I think that's the same sort of thing that is being suggested. So you possibly could try that, but sometimes when you push on the eye, you realize that it's rock hard and it makes them vomit again. And yeah, it's possibly worth a try, but to have a vomit bag there next to you.
Does the vomiting, I'm assuming, does the vomiting also contribute to increasing the intraocular pressure? Is that, or is it just trying to control?
I think it's just the pain.
It's a consequence of.
It's a consequence of the severe pain, I think. But it probably, when you vomit, you're probably going to be increasing your, because you're Valsalvaing, so you're probably going to be increasing the pressure in your eye. So it's probably not that helpful for that reason as well.
Erin has said that at a conference CME, you could use a cotton bud, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, 3 to 4 cycles as a technique for corneal indentation. There we go, team. If you're stuck and you need to try something and you don't have anything else, otherwise doing a script to your pharmacy for Tamoxifen eye drops could work.
That's probably going to take too long, but if you've got them there. Right. Yeah,
if your pharmacy's next door and you get on your YY and walk across.
Yeah.
Okay. I think some of the
take home messages are, if you've got someone with a red eye and they've got decreased vision, that's a red flag. If they've got a defect on fluorescein staining in their cornea, that's a red flag. If their pain is severe, that's a red flag. You need to probably ring up about those patients. And the one
anything
thing
white. Is my other key point.
Oh, yeah. Any white spot on the cornea, that's a good key point.
White anywhere. Yeah.
The one case that I didn't include in here was a case where someone gets cement dust or alkaline in their eye or splashes some nasty alkaline cleaner in their eye. And you want to really be quick to wash that all out and make sure you've got any particulate matter out, because it'll just keep on making alkaline if it's not washed out well. So getting a saline bag and lifting the lids up and squirting the saline in and trying to wash it all out really well. But there we go.
Brilliant. Thank you, Scott. I think today's just continued to reinforce my pre-existing wariness of intraocular steroids.
Yeah, good.
Okay, team. Thank you very much. So thank you very much, Scott, for your time this evening and giving us all that information about the acute red eye. And everyone have a good evening. Thank you very much.
Bye.